You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Metal Blade Records, Blacklight Media Records. I'm here alongside my good friend Matt Bacon, as usual, and super excited about our guests today, the hottest celebrity couple in metal, Charlie Benante, who you know from Anthrax, among other things, and Carla Harvey from The Butcher Babies. Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking the time.
You're talking about us.
Yes, I'm talking about you.
Hi, Chris.
How's it going? What's okay?
How are you good?
I mean, good. I'm actually in scramble mode. We're getting ready to reopen all the restaurants in Los Angeles and New York.
Yes.
Which is cool. Yeah. That's the only way I get to see you guys usually. So that's happening. I feel like after a year of this, it was just about a year ago that I saw Kiss at Staples Center, and like the very next day, the world kind of fell apart. So it's been about a year, and it's been a really long, horrible year, but I do see a light at the end of the tunnel. And for both my restaurants and for what you guys do, I think concerts and people going out to eat, it's just going to be insane when everything is completely back to normal, because everybody took going to concerts for granted and everyone took going out to eat for granted. And so I think shows, and especially metal shows, are going to be just completely bananas when people can go back to the shows. Do you guys have any plans? Are you starting to talk about anything yet in terms of getting back on the road?
I was going to say the last time we saw you was Valentine's Day last year.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah, that's true.
We were in LA, and that was like one of the last trips that we took.
I can't believe it was that long already.
It was that long, and it just seems like yesterday.
It really does. And then I moved here to Illinois, where we live at now. He's always lived here. I just moved here back to the Midwest. It was shortly after the pandemic, began. And that was crazy, moving in the middle of a pandemic and starting a whole new life in the middle of starting a whole new life along with everybody else. It's crazy.
But it was, the other thing about it is, of course, it was the fear of the unknown. Nobody knew last March how long this was going to go for. Remember, we were like, well, by May, things should be okay. And then May came, and it's like, well, hopefully August. And then August came, and then maybe, nope, ain't happening either.
The craziest thing for my band was that we had taken a year-long hiatus in 2019 to kind of regroup, and we needed a new bass player. We needed a break after 10 years of just being on the road 10 months out of the year. I had a chance to travel with him, spend more time with him, which was great. And then we were gearing up for our first tour of, 2020, hit it back hard. And it was in April with Hell Yeah. And we thought for sure this will just be a couple week thing. It'll be no big deal. And then, of course, all of our worlds came crashing down. And that tour never happened.
No. And other things happened in place of it. We found different things to do. We were creative doing things that we didn't know we could do, and really helped mentally. It helped me a lot. I mean, remember how crazy I was?
Yeah, he was getting pretty crazy at the beginning. I feel that I'm the kind of person that I learned a long time ago. I think it stems from being, I was an embalmer, a funeral director, saw a lot of death, and saw people die at different stages of their lives. I think you never know what's next for you, whether that's a career change or whatever it is. So I feel like I've learned how to be happy in the moment and live in the moment. And kind of, if I can't have that one thing that I normally do, I've learned how to be happy doing something else. So I was pretty serene, and I actually was like, okay, I could use a break, and I can sit at home and I can draw and I can write another book and I can do this and that. But he went a little nuts.
Well, I was 24/7 watching the news, like, what's going to happen? Like, the fear of, both mentally, your health, financially, like, what's going to happen? Like, how long is this going to go for? Who's in charge? And what's getting done. So you read this, you hear that, and I had to stop watching it all because it was driving me fucking crazy. And that's when she said, you know, you need to stop watching the news and stuff and go be creative again. And that's what I did. I called up two friends. I said, hey, you wanted to start doing some video songs and blah, blah, blah. And we started doing these quarantine jams. And that was a focus. And it got me out of that hole. I don't care what's going on. I need to know who's singing on this song, you know, stuff like that.
You've done a bunch of them, right? You've done a bunch of those quarantine jams, right?
Yeah. I have there's a record coming out of all of them.
Oh, yeah.
That's really fun. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So something awesome came out of it.
And, you know, Carlos sang on some of those songs too. And, you know, we both did things that we didn't think we were going to do.
And also we did it like in the kitchen together on a Friday night, you know? So instead of going out, you know, we love to go out to dinner. We love going out drinking. We love doing things. We're always traveling, doing something, but it became really nice and very intimate to actually sit at the kitchen table with each other, learn how to record vocals together while we're drinking. Our drink of the quarantine was Italian mules. Yeah. So he started making us these Italian mules, and, you know, I'd be singing vocals in the kitchen, and, or we'd be, you know, Charlie is an art, we're both artists. So, we'd be drawing or painting together, and it became a whole different thing, which I said, I thought was very intimate and very cool rather than just another night out at a restaurant. I feel like we developed an even deeper bond, like doing those things. I've never done those kinds of things with a significant other. And it was really cool for me.
No. And the thing I kept saying, which the title of this record that's coming out is called Silver Linings, because there were silver linings, even though like people were dying daily in this country and other countries too. It was just like the shock of it all. Like, how is this happening in our country? How is this taking place and nobody's like controlling it? It was driving me fucking crazy, man. Yeah. And that's why I just had to kind of focus to something better, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is terrible. I mean, you know, we have our restaurant company is 37 restaurants and nightclubs now, and we have like 5,500 employees, and we had to lay off like over 5,000 of them. And we ended up starting a nonprofit. We raised like $3 million and we've been paying people's rents. We paid for people's, you know, mom's funerals, like dishwashers that didn't have any money and their mom passed away from COVID. But what I really tried to tell my staff in my line of work is, you know, we always work really hard, and we also work when it's, you know, we work on Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve and all those days, you know, where everyone else is out and celebrating. I've really been just trying to, you know, my staff's going crazy. They want to get back to work, but I'm like, you're never going to get this opportunity again to connect with your family, to be with your kids, or to just do something that you love. Like, I started playing drums again during this quarantine, and you know, my wife is teaching. We bought a piano, and she's learning how to play piano. And so, like, there were silver linings for sure, but obviously, you know, it sucked as well.
You're absolutely right about that. It gave you time to connect with your family. I mean, we have dinner every night.
I don't think I ever cooked for anybody. That was like something I was never going to do. Wasn't into it. But when the pandemic started, I started cooking for Charlie and his daughter almost every night, and we'd buy the meal kits to learn how to use different ingredients. And now it's like, you know, I come home from the gym and he's like, what's for dinner? So I got to stop. I got to cut it out. He cooks as well. He makes some awesome Italian cutlets. And,
that's right.
You know, I have my specialties too.
Ceviche.
But it's been nice to, like I said, all these things are completely foreign to me, you know, like being in the home all the time and making dinner and connecting in that way. And I've come to find that I didn't think I was very domestic, but I think that I actually am. And I've enjoyed playing that role.
Domesticate.
Yeah. And even I moved in the middle of this as well. I moved in May, and I bought a brand new house here in LA. And I also got back to cooking at home, which is something I never did in New York, because I, you know, even though, you know, I had a nice apartment in New York, kitchens don't have a lot of real estate. And also I was in a restaurant every day. So like, if I was an accountant, I wouldn't go home and do math. Right. So going home and cooking was not, if it was my day off, I would like order out, because I don't want to cook on my day off. But here, for the last year, I've been cooking like crazy, and it's been great. But anyway, I want to stop there, because So if you notice, I'm looking at my phone, I'm not being rude. You know, I know you guys, obviously, and we run into each other when you guys come out to eat, or we see each other at shows or whatever. But it's a fairly new friendships for the three of us. I mean, I was on tour with Carla in 2013, but I think we only just said hi to each other, you know, on the tour. That was about it. So
and you
I
made
did
some burgers. So
yes, yeah. So I did do a little digging, and I don't know if you know what you want to talk about or what you maybe don't want to talk about, but I did learn this morning that you were an embalmer and a funeral director, and I was like, what? I had no idea. Is that something you would be comfortable talking about? I'm just curious.
Yeah, of course. That's what I do. Like,
I had no idea. So that piece of information, I didn't know. Like, so how does, what was the interest? Or, I mean, I'm sure it was fascinating.
Since I was a kid, I've always been probably overly fascinated with death and dying and how the body works. And, you know, I would read medical journals when I was very, very young and just learn about every disease that I could. And I also grew up Catholic. I went to, catechism and all that kind of stuff. But ever since I was a child, I knew I was an atheist. So I was kind of confused because everyone else around me seemed to, you know, be very devoutly interested in afterlife. And I wasn't. And so that made me kind of think about death in a different way from other people. Maybe as a child, I was really overly preoccupied with what happens after you die. And if there's some sort of energy exchange or what happens, because even as like, I'm telling 5-6 years old, I didn't think there was a heaven or hell. So I think that's kind of why I was so interested in it and wanted to find answers for myself and really sought out answers. And I always loved science, was super into everything science when I was young. So, when I found a program in LA, I was a model and actress and did, the news for the Playboy channel. And I was so unhappy. And I thought to myself, when I found this embalming program, I said, well, let me go back to school, stop being in entertainment and be of service to people who need me. And I went to school and I fell in love with funeral service, fell in love with helping people. I thought I would only want to do the embalming, and I actually ended up loving the funeral service part more. I loved being a funeral director and just holding people's hands and talking to them. I also worked in hospice with terminally ill patients, and now I'm a grief counselor and a death doula in my when I'm not touring. And so it's actually been really cool during COVID to grow that business as well. I have a business called Good Grief LA. And I'm, again, just a grief counselor and a death doula. And a death doula is kind of like a midwife for death. It's someone who comes in and educates the terminally ill person and their family about what's happening to their bodies, what's going to happen, helping them fulfill last wishes, legacy projects, hold, just like I said, even just human connection, human touch. You know, nowadays, I find that Americans especially are so afraid of death because it's the end of their American dream. And, you know, we don't have old people in the home with us anymore. Usually we send our grandmas, grandpas, and mothers and fathers to a nursing home. So we don't watch aging anymore like we used to back in the day. We don't watch death in the home. So it's shocking to people, and it really shouldn't be. And so a doula just comes in and kind of eases everyone's minds and lets you know that you have choices surrounding your death, which I think is really important, especially if you're faced with a long-term illness, and you want to know, you know, what's going to happen as you go. Even things like what smells you want, what music you want playing. People don't like to think about that kind of stuff, but it happens to all of us. And so It's good to be prepared and think about it.
No, it's incredible. I mean, it's incredible that you've done that kind of work, or people who do that kind of work. It's not talked about enough. I don't think how important it is. And like, you know, when you said that you fell in love with being a funeral director, I was kind of waiting for the second part of the sentence. And when you said just like holding people's hands and getting them through it, like, you know, I hate funerals. I never really give much thought to what a service the people that are directing the funeral are really doing. So thanks for opening my eyes to that.
Yeah.
My mom actually does something similar within the church. And one thing she said that really struck me was, you know, the amount of people. She was one of the last five people that that person saw before they died.
Yeah.
And that's like something that's been weighing on her, basically. Is that something that you think about?
I think it's a gift because some people don't mm-hmm. have anyone. And a lot of when I worked in hospice, there was a lot of older people who didn't have anyone or families weren't close or came in just once in a while. So, you know, I had one older gentleman and he always would say that I was his angel. And because he didn't have anyone. And like I said, human touch is one of the most important things in life. And if you have no one to talk to, no one to just kind of just put their hand on you. Like I said, human touch can change someone's life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think of me coming in and being like, well, what is this girl doing here? Why does she? I think that anybody who is willing to sit with you at a time when you need their presence is a gift. So
absolutely.
You know, another thing you said is I also grew up Catholic. I went to catechism, and a funny story about that. And I'm also atheist. I learned from my catechism teacher that there was no Santa Claus. The irony there is like so thick, like, you know, breaking my heart, telling me that Santa Claus didn't exist while at the same time trying to make me believe that this guy who's having an hell. So anyway,
I have a funny Santa Claus story too. My dad, I told him the story. It was one of the most heartbreaking stories of my childhood. My dad has a very big personality. It's not always the greatest, nicest personality, but he had bought me a sewing machine for Christmas. And then Santa brought me a sewing kit to go with it. And as a child, I was just blown away that Santa was so smart that he knew that I was getting this sewing machine to go with the sewing kit he was bringing me. And my dad was so jealous that Santa Claus got props. He was like, Santa didn't buy you that shit. I did. There's no fucking Santa Claus. And I was just like so shocked that I don't even think I used the sewing machine after because it was so traumatic to me that Santa Claus didn't bring me anything.
Oh my God. So, but anyway, Matt wants to ask you a bunch of dorky Jaws questions.
I mean, you know, there's always Jaws questions, you know, because you were in the Jaws documentary, right?
I was.
This is something I've like thought about extensively. Like, how does it even feel to like be in the documentary for your favorite movie? Like, that's got to be kind of nuts.
Right.
So met the guys who were doing it. And they said, we can't get out to you to send a crew. Can you get a film crew there to do it? Here's a bunch of questions, blah, blah, blah. And then just talk about why you love Jaws. And I think I talked for about 3 hours and they edited it down to like, you know, 60 seconds or something. But
that's awesome.
When I saw it and I saw like Roy Scheider and then someone else and then me and then back to like Spielberg, I flipped out. I'm like, I'm in the company of these people that I worship, you know? So Jaws is a, I don't know what it is about the movie, but, you know, I took a trip to Martha's Vineyard many, many years ago, and I wanted to find each location that things were shot or this happened or that happened. And when I went there, it's in Edgartown in Martha's Vineyard. Not a lot of people knew anything about Jaws locations or anything. I had to find them myself. The kid who played Alex Kintner was a manager in the restaurant down there, and they had a thing called the Alex Kintner Burger. And it was like a fish fillet type of sandwich with like this red sauce. So
how did they find you? How did they know that you were such a huge mega fan?
A friend of mine who does a lot of the horror conventions knew of them from like someone at Universal, and then they put me together.
Because I feel like Jaws to me is sort of like hearing extreme metal for the first time, where like you hear it and you're like, what the fuck? You know, and it kind of scares you. And like that, you know, and you kind of look for that high. Did you get that feeling too, where it's like, that movie's like more disturbing than like any slasher I've ever seen?
I think out of any movie, I think it's still, it kind of messed with me. I can't go in like deep water till this day. I just freak out, you know? So it definitely had a long lasting effect. Like The Exorcist too had a bit of an effect because I too grew up Catholic. And when that movie, I was young when that movie came out. And like Catholicism in America, especially, you couldn't touch that, you know, back then. If you said the slightest thing, you were done, you know? And when that movie came out, it went against a lot of the beliefs that, you know, Catholics had. So that's why I think it has such a big effect on, it was a big box office draw. If it came out today, I don't think it would be the same.
Right, right. Have you ever seen the movie Open Water?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that is terrifying to me. It's just terrifying. I can barely swim. I only get in my pool here at the house. I won't get into an ocean or anything like that.
Have you ever gone diving, like scuba diving or anything?
No, so it's funny. Last year I was in Jamaica or somewhere. I don't remember where I was. 2 years ago, rather, sorry. And we took a boat out way deep, and everybody was going to go snorkeling. And I decided to, it's like eight couples. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to get in the water. And I had a life jacket on and everything. And as soon as I climbed down the ladder and I dove in, and it was like, get me the fuck out of here right now. But a funny thing that happened was, as I was swimming or struggling to get back to the boat, somebody else, another gentleman that was with us, was having the same problem, but was having an even more extreme reaction. So I actually helped him get onto the boat first. And Natalie reminds me of that when I say that I'm terrified of water. She's like, yeah, but when you had a chance to, yourself or somebody else, like, you forgot that you were terrified of the water for a minute and helped somebody else. So
the worst thing about, for me, I went diving one time and put a tank on and everything, breathing apparatus, all that whole, and went down with an instructor too. It was in Hawaii. And when I got down to the surface, I looked up, I freaked out, and I just panicked and shot right back up. I couldn't breathe. He followed me up. He's like, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yeah." I just freaked out, Went back down, and then I got calm and everything. And then it's a different world down there. And it's like, it's not our world to be fucking with. So whoever's down there, it's just like, you're done, you ain't getting out of there, faster than they're getting you. So nice. I had all these visions of, in a distance, something was coming. I was freaking myself out. So Jaws, that fucking movie.
So then what I learned about you today, Charlie, is that, I think I knew this anyway, but I read that your most favorite fictional character is Darth Vader, right?
I love Darth Vader.
So I wanted to show you a tattoo that I have. This is right when I got it, so my leg is shaved, so it may look weird, but I have a stormtrooper, and on his knuckles it says Dark Side.
That's awesome.
I have that on my leg. Let's get to the present a little bit. So you guys kind of covered what you were doing in quarantine. What's the rest of 2021 look like? I mean, you got the live stream coming up, right?
I've got a live stream. Finally, we play a show. And we just were rehearsing all week, and it was pretty awesome. I said I was happy at home. Didn't know if I felt like doing it. There's just things you go through in your head, but it was really fun. And it's like riding a bike, like they say. You just get back up there, and it felt good to be on stage with my friends again, And then, of course, we had some stuff planned in the summer. So everything's still up in the air. There's talk of tours. I do know that the festivals in California, Aftershock is going to happen, which we're really excited about. Both of our bands are on Aftershock and Louder Than Life in the fall.
Yeah. So I actually have a call with Danny Wimmer tonight.
Tell him we said hello, and we cannot wait for those festivals. Those are definitely going to happen, supposedly. Who knows what else will happen the rest of the year? And
nothing.
If we're stuck at home, I've got personal plans. I write comic books, so I have two more that I'm writing. I'm writing a second book. He's writing some solo stuff that I'm helping him with. It's like all these little dreams that you have that may or may never come to be finished projects. But, I think you owe it to yourself to do them, especially while you have time. I definitely couldn't sit at home all day and do nothing. It's like, I have to be working. So.
No, I have to keep busy too, or else exactly. You start falling into, getting depressed watching things. So, We have an art show that we're doing, which I've never done anything like that before in my life. And she kind of pushed me to do it, which it hasn't happened yet. So after it happens, I'll let you know how how happy I was. But it's definitely taken its toll.
He's going to love it. he's sometimes I got to push him a little bit to, you know, go outside his comfort zone. I mean,
I've been painting a lot.
He's been painting. It's been awesome to, like I said, again, those Friday nights together, painting have been awesome.
Painting.
Oh, cool. Great.
Have you discovered any new, like, influences on your visual art, either of you? Because you both kind of are involved in that.
Well, I actually have been really, really smitten with, you know, the old illustrations. I don't know the name of it. But the old stuff that you'd see in the 50s and like Playboy magazines, the kind of smutty, my art is always a little smutty, but this is a different, like a very cartoony pinup-y style that I've been kind of obsessed with. We've both been doing a lot of stuff digitally, like on Procreate. So that's like learning a whole different thing as well. I usually use ink and marker. And so you have to like learn everything again when you actually do it, you know, in and out on the iPad. So that's been kind of fun to exchange brushes and
I love textures. Doing it when I'm like absorbed in the whole thing of doing a painting and everything. I'm into it. And then I often say I hate painting, but I love having painting because the finished product, mm-hmm. like, oh, that looks great. Why was I, you know, yeah. why did I hate doing it?
He's so good at, you know, things like that. Like that's how we met, you know, we met backstage at a show and we started talking and my band had covered an SOD song. So we were talking about that. And I said, hey, I heard that you are an artist and I am an artist too. And I sent him some stuff and we talked about all the silly stuff that we like, you know, we're both big nerds. We love Star Wars and comic books and toys, you know? Sharing art together and then making art together has been really cool. And like I said, I want everyone to see how awesome he is at everything. Oh, cool.
There you go.
I'm still waiting for mine. Where's mine?
Chris got it. Well, yeah.
I don't know that you could write that record in 2020. The SOD.
No. Not.
Couldn't write them.
That was like one of my favorite thrash records in high school. And I've definitely like gone back and been like, oh, okay.
nobody has a sense of humor anymore.
So nope. My band covered Pussy Whipped and it was classic. Such a fun song for a couple of broads to sing.
Like they would have canceled us immediately.
I mean, they just fucking changed the name of Mr. Potato Head. See that?
I saw that.
Come on.
I thought the Dr. Seuss thing was kind of weird, but it was actually from the Dr. Seuss family.
I did read a little more about that, and I did see a few things that were kind of eyebrow raising in the literature there. But, you know, I just feel like certain things are like a stamp in time. And you would write them today, but there's no reason to take them off the market completely or take them out of the library. It's like you can explain why it's wrong to people, exactly. But
it needs to be there for a reason.
I mean, there was like all these book burning, you know, things back when I was a kid, you know, certain books that you weren't supposed to read. And I
thought that was wrong.
I think, well, that too. But, you know, I just feel like every piece of literature has its place, and you learn from the bad. And
I have to interrupt you and tell you guys. So you got these beautiful pinball machines behind you, which I'm very jealous of. But the one directly behind Carla, the one all the way to my left, has a on the bottom there. There's like a little video, like a screen, and it shows somebody putting a quarter into the
On the Iron Maiden one.
On the Iron Maiden one, it shows a hand, every now and then it shows a hand putting a quarter into the machine, but the way you're sitting, it looks like it's feeding your ear quarters.
That's how I keep talking. Money in.
Feed my ear.
So funny. I'm super jealous. I did just get an outdoor, a beautiful, beautiful outdoor pool table, which is great. And I have space for some pinball machines, but I don't have any yet. So I'm super jealous of your setup.
We'll talk about that afterwards. I'll put you in touch with that.
Okay, great. I love it. We don't want to keep you all night. I do have a couple of quick questions. So the Butcher Babies record that's coming out is coming out when?
We're not sure yet. You know, we had to kind of we've been releasing a single every month, which has been actually really fun. And, you know, so I don't know when the album is going to come out. We're doing things a bit differently this time. So we dropped our label. We wanted to try something different, and we're doing everything on our own. And we're just being distributed. And it's been really cool because we've been hiring our own team, our own PR team. And we've actually, our Spotify listens have gone up insanely doing it on our own. So we're going to kind of continue doing this formula for a while, a new song, a new video every month, something to look forward to for the fans all the time. And then when the time is right, we'll release everything also as an album. But like I said, I think this gives the fans something to look forward to.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. And Charlie, what about you? Are there Anthrax plans in the future?
So right before COVID hit, right before we shut down, we were working on a new record. We had about 7 songs, and then it hit, and that was it. We just kind of stopped. And we felt that we didn't want to put a record out during this time that we couldn't go and promote it, you know? Because why? Why, you know, oh, there's a new Anthrax record. Okay, great. And it's done in 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we waited, and during this time, I've been writing a lot. So I have like, you know, 15 more songs ready to go. So I want to have a bunch of songs ready so that we can pick and choose which ones are going to make it. And then, I don't know, it's a good thing right now. I feel really good. I see like the yellow light is approaching green, and, you know, I think it's going to be really inspiring once everything is open and we're out doing it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, because this year is 40 years of Anthrax, right?
Well,
sort of, depending how you count it.
Let me verify. So when we're saying 40 years, it's like since high school. So like Scott started the band when he was in high school. I joined the band a couple of years later. So it's about 30 something years, but nevertheless, it's a long fucking time. So we're doing this live stream, which is going to consist of a song from every record. And we're going to do like maybe 30, almost 40 songs during this live stream. And it's going to go from Fistful all the way to like For All Kings. And it's going to be intense. My arms are really fighting with me right now about it.
Yeah.
I got to do it.
How do you even learn 40 songs like that? That's crazy.
Well, if you've been in the band since,
true.
Yeah. You better know the song. But yeah, I mean, coming from a singer's point of view.
Yeah, I mean, we just did our first album in its entirety, you know, for our live stream and a few extras. And some of the, like, the lyrics that, you know, it's like we wrote these lyrics. I just don't remember the song going there. But yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
You
know, you get back on your bike and you start riding. I'm going to be rusty, but, you know, it'll happen over a period of hours.
So like when you guys do, if the Danny Wimmer festivals go through, like The Louder Than Life is in September, how long typically would you spend with your respective bands rehearsing in this, like where we are now, right? You haven't been touring, you haven't been able to be in the same room with everybody. Like how long will you rehearse so that you're ready for the stage?
I mean, like I said, my band has spent time rehearsing for this big show. So we could probably go in a couple of days and do it, you know. For singers, especially when you scream and then sing, I think it takes a couple of days to get your voice back strong, or else you'll lose it the second you go out there. It's like a muscle that you have to work out. So, I mean, I would probably be warming up at home and then spend a couple of days with the band.
That's what we do. The thing about us is we don't like to over like rehearse that much, because we like to keep it really spontaneous. If something should happen, we like to kind of go with it, you know. The only thing we have to do is, of course, you know, for lighting cues, you know, things like that, the technical side of things. But as far as playing goes, we like to keep the songs kind of, you know, there's an element of tension to it.
That sounds stressful to me.
Oh, but it adds to the, you know.
Keeps it a little bit raw, right?
Yeah,
I like it.
That's rock and roll.
That is rock and roll. Yeah. Very cool. I can't believe it's been 40 years. Holy shit.
I don't even remember it.
I'm going to be 50 in 2 weeks. And like the other day I saw that it was the 35th anniversary of Master of Puppets. And I'm like, I instantly was transformed to when I was, I mean, I remember like being 15 and work, you know, working as a prep cook in a restaurant and listening to that record every single goddamn day. And I'm like, it's been 35 years. Like yeah. Death is approaching. I am going to need you, Carl.
I mean, I used to think about this stuff when I was like, you know, like when the Beatles records would hit like the 25th anniversary, you would think, oh my God, you know. Now that stuff just comes out like, you know, it's 25 years already. You believe that? Shit, it's been 10. It's just flying by. And I think this last
metal bands in particular that came out sort of in the 80s, what, you know, and the heavier metal, not the hair metal, but the staying power, like everybody's still out there. Everybody bigger, as big as they've ever been. You know, you guys, Metallica, Maiden, Priest, like it's crazy the staying power of metal bands.
Another generation picks up.
It's pretty cool to watch. When I was on tour with him all last year, just, you know, and I've been many times, but I never get bored of watching Anthrax because each member of the band is like a character and everyone is so fun to watch. After all these years, doesn't matter how many times I see them, it's still just so much fun.
You know why? Because it's not over rehearsed.
I'm still not gonna ever use that method ever.
No, but I what was the show we were going to when it all, we were gonna go see Elton John, I think.
Yeah,
and then it all came to a close, you know, and it's like, shit, my daughter was pissed because Billie Eilish was here the next week and that all came down. So people are just, you know, hungry again. And I think once this happens, I think a lot of the tension in this country, it's starting to kind of dissipate, but I think it's going to kind of calm down even more, you know?
Yeah, let's hope.
I hope so.
And I can't wait for metal to come back, but it might be one of the last things to really come back because it's impossible to have a socially distant mosh pit. It's impossible.
No, but the one good thing about, you know, a lot of bands, even bands my size, is that there are venues that are going to open up for bands our size first. And even if, you know, you guys did like a more of a club tour that was super limited there, you know, I think that there'll be places for metal bands to play. There's not going to be places for, you were talking about Billie Eilish, that, you know, they're not going to be able to do big tours like that, but the smaller tours, I think you're going to be.
Didn't you guys play, didn't the Anthrax play St. Vitus a couple years ago?
Yeah. We did a thing for a charity for
Gilmore. Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I don't know if I met you before that. I don't know if I, did we know each other by then?
The first time I met you, I think, was at the Stanton Social, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Upstairs. But yeah, I think I didn't meet you on the Mayhem Tour. I know that.
It was, he was on the Mayhem Tour that I was on, 2013.
We did the one.
You did before. You did 2012.
It was before that, yeah. So let me ask you this question. What's popular right now in your world as far as food? What's the new thing that's...
Honestly, the whole industry has been shaken up so much. I mean, I would just say that I've never seen such a movement. And it's obviously, it's part of the fabric of California and Los Angeles. But I'm seeing it everywhere is just the sort of, you know, vegan, vegetarian and sustainability, having things be sustainable, not necessarily farm to table, but this people are getting behind sustainability more than they ever have. And just people are moving towards a more plant-based diet, and chefs are embracing that. I'm embracing it more than I ever have. I mean, I'm not a meat and potatoes guy. I'm a meat guy and I don't necessarily eat like the healthiest things. And even over just the last maybe 4 or 5 years, you know, I've really started embracing vegetables. And I mean, I was really fat for a while. I still kind of go up and down, but I was really fat. And so I kind of had to take control of that. And I started going to a more plant-based diet and cooking in my restaurants. I lost 30 pounds. People magazine covered it. It was like really weird, but I just started cooking with vegetables a lot more. And I was like, wow, I've been cooking for 30 years. And I am only now learning that that parsnips are fucking delicious. Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course.
In the email, I said we could talk about the joys of bok choy. And I wasn't joking. We put bok choy in the air fryer and it's like the greatest thing.
I made, I make fish tacos with bok choy and pineapples. And it's awesome. Nice.
Very nice. Maybe we'll have to cook together one time in my house.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, could we be on Iron Chef one night?
Yeah, for sure. We can do whatever you want. We can do whatever you want.
So they can find my tacos. Slip, yeah.
These are terrible. Like Gordon Ramsay. It's just like, what's this shit?
We got to wrap this up. Matt, you got anything else for this lovely couple?
No, I'm just very grateful to have gotten to have the chance to talk to you guys.
Thanks for having us. It was fun.
Yeah.
Great having you. Anything else, anything you want to pitch, promote, tell, talk about? You didn't bring up coffee once, which I'm can't believe.
My coffee's everywhere. I wish. No, it's, of course, you could get it on my website, myname.com and charliebenante.com. And of course, what else are we doing?
We're just doing a lot of art, more of these art shows. You got to check out his art on his site. He's not going to promote it himself. He's got some really awesome prints for sale that he's been working hard on. And I do too. CarlaHarvey.com is my site. And please listen to all the new Butcher Baby stuff. We have some really heavy stuff coming out in the coming months and stuff that we're super proud of. And so don't pass it up.
Yeah. And Beauty in Essex in Chicago. When?
Yeah, when?
You know what? There are three Beauty in Essexes. I can't say it out loud because nothing's signed yet, but there are three Beauty in Essex, new Beauty in Essex locations that are very close to coming to reality, and Chicago is one of them. But I can't say anymore.
Okay.
But I will keep you posted. You'll be one of the first to know, if not the first. All right. You guys are awesome. I really appreciate the time. I can't wait till we see you again. Let me know when you come out west. The restaurants will be open unless something weird happens again. But I think I would hope not. And do your thing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more. And above all, keep it heavy.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.